Hi everyone. So today's talk is What's New for Windows 8 Developers Part 2. My name is David Brella. I'm the Regional Technical Evangelist for Infogistics. They're a user interface company, so if you want to come talk to me afterwards, just come see me at my booth in the expo hall. So today I'm going to take you on a journey. We're going to go through and step by step have a look at how you may want to build a Windows 8 application. I'm going to take you right through from bare basics. So if you've done anything with Windows Forms before, or you've done a little bit with WPF, but you might not know if you were doing it correctly, I'm going to start off right at the beginning and have a look at how you may go about manually updating a user interface by interacting with controls directly. I'll take you through why that may not be a good idea. So we'll move on to things such as data bindings. We'll see how view models can help us pull out all of our business logic and pull it out of our user interface. Look at how iNotify property change and observable collections can help us do reactive screens. We'll look at data templates to make all of our business data look sexy. We'll use commands to decouple things a little bit more, the portable class library, and we'll wrap everything up with Caliburn Micro. So we'll look at Caliburn Micro so that everything that we were looking at and doing manually, I'll say, okay, everything we just did manually, we'll do it in like one line in Caliburn Micro. So let's start right off at the beginning with manually updating the user interface. So we're just going to launch Visual Studio, and I'm just going to make a brand new blank application. Yeah, I was testing before. So TechEd demo. Now, for anyone who's done any WPF, Silverlight, or Windows Phone development before, the solution will look pretty familiar to you. Properties and references, they're just there in every solution anyway. Common and assets, they're just a few files to just help you out. These bottom two are for when you're packaging up your application, you want to package it up and put it up into the store, they're just there. So the only two files that we really care about in here are app and main page. App just defines the entry point for your application, so if you load it up, it just defines that there are a few resource libraries, so then you can style your application. But the one we care about is main page. I'll flick it around so then people at the back can read that a bit better. Okay, so this is a blank page. There's nothing in here except for a grid. So let's start off with a hello world. So we'll just create a new text block. We'll call it our greeting text block. We'll set the font size to something big. And finally, we just set the text to be hello world. Close angle brackets, and there it is. So that's one way that we can go and update a control. We can just, right there in the designer, just put in our text, but it's kind of static. So we'll move on to the next stage. Now we're going to put in a text box where we can put in someone's name, and we're going to have a button. So when we click that button, it's going to update our greeting from hello world to hello TechEd. So add in a new text box. Give it a name of person name text box. Give it a font size. And we'll add in a button. Button will just say hello on it. And we'll give it a click event. Okay, straight away our user interface looks kind of funky. Let's increase the font size. And zoom out just a little bit. So all our controls are there, but they're all being laid on top of each other. And the reason why that's happening is because we put them all into a grid. So all of these controls, it's just making the controls full screen, and it's just aligning them to where the defaults are. So these text box and text blocks are over on top of each other, and this button's over to the side. So the control that I love is called Stack Panel. So about 80% of my user interfaces are just stack panels. So it's a background operation that it's not doing in the background. So what I'm going to do is close off that stack panel. And what the stack panel does is all the controls that are in it, it just stacks the controls one on top of each other and go and stack them vertically. We can also change so we go and stack them horizontally. So I'll stack them over to the come on. No, it won't even let me kill it. I didn't sacrifice the three chickens to the demo gods this morning. Nope. And of course, I practiced this 5 times yesterday and that didn't happen. Okay. Stack panel. Closing the stack panel. There we go. So all of the controls now are stacked on top of each other vertically. So we can go and change the orientation to horizontal, and it'll stack them that way instead. Font size is 48. Cool. So far we've got our user interface, we've got our text block, we've got a text box to take in that input, and a button. So we just need to add in that little bit of business logic for that button. So on our page, let's go into the code behind, scroll right down to the bottom, and there's our click event. So all we're going to do is say that our greeting text block, its text property is going to equal hello, and we'll grab the person name and grab that text. Header 5 is going to compile it, package it up, deploy it to my local computer, and there we go. So starts off with hello world, Tech Ed Oz, say hello, hello Tech Ed Oz. Really simple. And for anyone who's done any sort of WinForms development or just basic UI development, you've probably done that before. Now, there are a few issues with what we've done there. We've now combined in our business logic and our user interface code. We've mixed them in very tightly. We're going and finding a control named that, and we're finding a property on it named that. Then we're going to find another control with that name, finding that property and setting it to all of that. Now, the problem with this is if we go and we change the name of any of these controls, instantly all of our business logic is broken, which doesn't seem correct. We're just changing our user interface a little bit, but our business logic is being affected by it. Along those same lines, if we change these from being text boxes and text blocks, and we decide we want to use a different control, like a list view or something like that, suddenly we're going to have different properties on it. So it may not be the text property anymore. It may now be content. So again, just we're still displaying the same sort of data, but just because we're changing the control, suddenly we're having to go in here and changing our source code. We shouldn't have to do that. So we're going to look at ways now how we can go and do this better. So we're going to go delete that click event. We're going to delete that. And we're going to pull all that business logic out. And to do that, we're going to look at MVVM, which stands for Model View View Model. There we go. Model View View Model. So this pattern has become quite popular on all of the XAML-based platforms. So WPF, Silverlight, Windows Phone, this pattern is becoming quite popular because of the advanced data binding the advanced data binding capabilities that are on those platforms. So what we're going to do today is, so far we've only been looking at this main view, and we've been doing everything in there. So we're going to extract out all the business logic and put it into a class which is just going to have pure business logic in it, called our main view model. Then we're going to use data binding to connect the two together. So let's move on to the next demo, which is about view models. So let's just clean up a few little things first. I'm going to create 2 folders, one called views, a second folder called view models. Then I'm going to move our main page into the views, and for fun I'm going to rename it to main view. So if we go back into the code behind of it, change it from main page. Oh, shortcut for anyone who doesn't know, you can tell it to refactor rename. And it'll go and update it all through my application. Build to make sure I didn't break anything. Cool. Okay, so we've got our main view. Let's just make our view model now. So it's just a plain standard class. And the convention is, if we've got our view, which is called main view, we're going to have our view model, which is called main view model. Makes it easier to line the two up. Now, our main view model, we're just going to put a property on that which is going to have our greeting in it. So it could be, that greeting could be hello world or hello tech ed. So we just need to create a property on our view model that we can bind to. So another shortcut for you all, if you type in prop for property, hit tab tab, it'll create an auto property for you. String tab greeting, And yet another one, C-T-O-R for constructor. Yeah, tab. Greeting equals hello world, V2. Build that, cool. So we've got our view model. All we need to do now is connect our view and our view model together. So go back into our main view. So up the top, this is a page. So if we go page.dataContext, we can actually go and set what the data context is for this page, for this view. So whenever we're going to do any data binding from now on, we're going to tell it to look at our main view model. To do that, we only need to bring in one namespace, XML namespace, view model, and point it at techeddemo.viewmodels. There you go. So now it's pointing to all of the classes that are sitting in the view models folder. View model, main view model, build. Whoops, let's just get rid of our text. So what we just did there, so remember with XAML, whenever you put things inside of angle brackets, it's the same as saying create a new instance of that class. So right there, we've created a brand new instance of main view model. So we've got a new instance just sitting there floating around. And here, we're setting it for the data context for that page. So it's all just happening magically and automatically for us. So now, we've got our control, the text for it. We can now use a keyword called binding. And so that is how we now bind things from our view to a class. Now, as soon as I go binding, it's just going to try and bind this control, which is a text block, to our data context, which is the main view model. So the best thing that this text block can do is just say that object.toString. So it's just printing out the class name at the moment. But that's not what we want. We want to actually bind it to a property on our view model. So if we go path equals, we can tell it which property we want it to bind to, which in this case was greeting. And straight away, we can see at design time, it's already binding to our view model. We've got that working straight away. If we hit F5, it's all just going to work. Okay, so I could now go and add another button and we could do hello David, hello tech it again. But instead, let's do something a little bit different. So we're going to add in a little bit of business logic in here now, which is just going to have a number called total. And that one number, we're going to add in two bits of business logic that we can do to it. So the first one is just going to make, the business logic is we add one to that number. And the second bit of business logic is we're just going to double that number. That's it. So inside of our view model, we're going to add in another property. So again, prop, tab, int, total. So we can... Whoops. Oh, another shortcut for you all. So if you're on a line and you have nothing selected, if you go Control C, it copies that entire line. So if you go Control V, it'll just paste that entire line straight back in for you. Text block. Font size 48. And this time we're binding to total instead. So it's straight away, it's binding to our total. So let's just add in a little bit of business logic now. So we're going to have public void increment. So we can increment our total by one, total plus equals one. Public void double. Whenever we invoke this bit of business logic, we're just going to double it, times equals two. Easy. Button. Content increment by one. Give it a click event. Let's do that again. Double. And we'll have another click event, thank you.
Okay, so we've got our business logic now in our view model where we can increment this number or double it. So now we just have to hook these buttons up to invoke those methods on our view model.
Let's go back into the code behind for this view. We can see our two click events there. So this one was to increment
This one was to double. Now in double. So in order to invoke those methods on our view model, we need to just grab a handle to that view model so we can start invoking these methods on it. So if you remember back in our view, right up the top, we set the data context of this page to be this main view model. So we're just going to grab a handle to it. We just put in a temporary variable here, main view model, called view model. So we're just putting a temporary variable here so that we can just grab a handle to our view model. So in our constructor, once we've constructed up this page, we're just going to set this, this view model to equal this.dataContext because it's already been set in the XAML as main view model. So don't worry if this looks a little bit scary, because in the next step we're about to strip all of this out. Here we go. So when we click on that increment button, we can say view model.increment. So invoke that method on our view model. Same thing down here. View model.double. Build, run. So now when we start clicking on this button, nothing works. But there's a good reason why that doesn't work. If we go back and we set a breakpoint right here on the button click, if we click on it, we'll see it does actually go into that breakpoint. If we step in to our view model, it does actually go into our view model. We can see the total is currently sitting at 18. Step over, it's gone up to 19. But when we go back in, it still says 0. Now, the reason why this is happening is when we're doing data binding, the view and the view model, it only data binds when this page first gets constructed. So at that point in time, it does that binding, it evaluates it, figures out that the greeting is hello world v2, and our total is currently set to 0. But our view doesn't know when it needs to update itself. So we just need to give our view some little hints so it knows when it needs to go and check for new values, so it knows when to update itself. So let's go back to our view model. So this interface may be familiar. I notify property changed. Another shortcut, if you type in the name of an interface or class which you haven't got a using statement in for, you can just click that, or shortcut control period will bring it up for you. So bring in that using statement, so that works now. But because it's an interface, it knows that this class is going to have a few things which that interface defines. So if you go control period again, you can tell it to implement the interface for us. So if I scroll right down, you added that. Now, what happens here is whenever we do data binding and we data bind to a class, in this case, when we're data binding to this view model, the control automatically checks if what it's data binding to implements the iNotify property change interface. If it does, then the control knows that it can listen for updates. So it will go and it will subscribe to this property changed event. So what we need to do, we have our view model just raise this property change event to say, hey, something has changed. So we're just going to create one little helper method here called on private void on property changed. We're going to take in the name of the property that changed. Now, whenever anything binds, whenever anything is subscribed to this event, it will mean that that's not null. So if anything is subscribed to it, then we'll just tell them, hey, something changed. New event args, and we pass in the name of that property that changed. So again, I'm just taking everyone through from base principles how we're doing this, so then later we can simplify all of this once you understand why we're doing this. So let's go back to total. This time we can go prop full. So rather than just creating an auto property, which just has a standard get set, if we type in prop full, hit tab tab, it will create a property with a backing field for us. And it will automatically get and set from our backing field. Which means whenever we set this property, we can just raise that property change event now. So whenever we go and change this total, when we add it by when we add one to it or double it, we'll just raise an event to our view and say, hey, this property changed called total. So the view will check if anything is bound to a property called total. If it is, it will tell those controls to update themselves automatically. And we can do the same thing here. Prop full, tab tab, string, greeting, greeting. Copy, paste, and this one was greeting. Now, one thing you have to be careful of is we've got a string literal there. So if we were to change greeting to g'day or something like that, then we'd have to change our string literal to be g'day also. Otherwise, we'd change our property, but we'll be telling our view that something different changed. Okay, now that that's all done, if we run it again, hit increment, it's going to go in, it's going to hit our button click, we've gone into our view model, 0, 1, hit continue, but now our user interface is being updated. So that's cool. If we go back and have a look at our view now, we're doing nothing more but a few bindings. So let's go back to our model view view model diagram again. So at the moment, we've got We've got our main view and our main view model at the moment, and that's working okay. But if we have a look at what we've done, we've got a property on our view model called total, and our view, we've got a text block control which is binding to that property. And that works well, but if you remember what we were doing with our button click events, we had a little bit of code in our view behind where we were doing some stuff. So again, we're trying to pull out as much code out of the view as we can. So if we can bind controls to properties, why can't we bind button events to methods inside of our view model? And we can. So to do that, we can use a class interface called iCommand. Now, with commands, the .NET framework just gives us an interface called iCommand. It's up to us to implement it ourselves. There are a lot of model view view model frameworks out there which implement command for us. So you can just use a framework such as MVVM Lite or Caliban Micro if you need a command class. But because it only really takes about 4 lines of code, rather than just importing in a library only for commands, we're just going to write it ourselves. So at the bottom of main view model, rather than creating a new class, we're just going to do it inline. So public class delegate command implements I command. Same shortcuts again, control period, bring in the using statement, control period, implement it. We're 50% of the way there already. Now, a delegate command, if anyone who may not remember, a delegate is simply a pointer to a method. So what we're going to do is this delegate command, we're going to pass it in a delegate, a pointer to a method, so that whenever we click on a button, we're just going to invoke a method. Prop, tab, tab, action, object, execute action, CTOR, constructor again. So when we construct up one of these, we need to take in that delegate, which points to that method that we want to invoke. Execute action. So then that equals that. Almost finished. Can execute is an interesting method property. So whenever we bind our buttons to our command object, it's going to evaluate can execute. So for the moment, we're just going to return true, but we can put in some business logic there to return true or false. So why an instance of when you may want to do that is when you're filling out a customer order. So if the customer order is not valid, we'll return false, which means that the button will automatically be disabled. Once that customer order is valid again, we'll return true, and it will just automatically enable the button so that you can click it now. So for the moment, we're just going to return true. Later on, when we're using Caliban Micro, we'll see how we can use that to automatically enable and disable our button. So whenever we ask this command to execute, we're just going to tell it, hey, that delegate we gave you before, just invoke it for us. That's it. So we've written an entire command class. We can just package it up, put it up onto NuGet, and release it as yet another model view view model framework. Scroll right up. Now, our main view model, let's just put in those commands so that our user interface can now bind to our view model. So we've got our two commands. We've got our increment command, prop tab tab, I command, command, and this one was the double command. Cool. So now our user interface can now bind to it, just like we were doing before with our text properties. In our constructor, we just tell it what those two commands are bound to now by pointing to. So these are properties, commands. So our increment command equals a new delegate command. And so when we construct it up, we just point it at the method. So whenever we invoke the increment command in our view model, we want to invoke the increment method. That's it. Let's do the same thing for the double command. Go back to our view. So for our buttons, we can go here, remove the click method, because we're no longer doing it in code behind. We're now saying command, and we can use bindings again now. Path equals increment command. Same thing here. Command equals binding. Yet another shortcut for you all. If the only thing you're doing is path equals and you're passing in the path, the property that you want to bind to, if that's all you're doing, you don't need to put in path equals. We can just tell it binding double command. Build that. That's going to work. Let's go back and just clean up now. Back to our view model. Let's just remove and sort, strip that out. So if we look at our view model, it's got nothing in here apart from actual business logic. So we've got our properties, which are holding a little bit of state. And we've got our business logic methods here, increment and double. If we go back into the code behind for our view, we can now get rid of that button click method. We can get rid of that button click method. We can get rid of that because we're not using it. We're no longer doing things manually through the view model, so we can get rid of all of that. That is defined in the XAML page. No one really reads summaries anyway. So we can go here, organize using, remove and sort. So now the code behind for our views has nothing there at all. It's only got that one call to initialize component, which is required. But apart from that, there's nothing there. If we go back into our view, we don't need that either. We don't need that. So the only thing our view has is just pure bindings to whatever our data is. There's nothing in our code behind, and our view model is pretty much pure business logic. You could sit there and argue with me that these two lines are not pure business logic, but if you forgive me those two, our application is now pretty clean. And if we hit F5, it all just works. So if we look at what we've done now, we've gone and decoupled everything, our view and our view model out. We've pulled all the business logic out into the view model, which means now our view model is just there holding all of our state for this page. So rather than it being held inside of the view, all of our page state is being held within the view model. Because of that, and our view model is pure C# code holding pure business logic, it means that we can now reuse that same view model across a number of platforms. So we can reuse that same exact view model that I just wrote on Windows 8, on Windows Phone. We could even go and use it on WPF and Silverlight if you want. And if you want, you can take this a step further, and if you use some other tools such as MonoTouch and MonoDroid, they allow you to write C# code that runs on iPhone and Android. So you can take that same view model, and now you've got cross-platform native development. And there's the visualized. We can use that one same view model. We just have to re-implement the view on each of those platforms, which kind of makes sense anyway. On a Windows 8 application, you're going to have a big high-resolution screen, which is based on touch, whereas your Silverlight application is going to be on a desktop where you're pointing and clicking. And Windows Phone, you've got a much constrained viewing size, so you're going to be using different controls on a Windows Phone. So let's have a quick look at how we can do that using the Portable Class Library. So inside of our solution, we're going to add a new project. portable, and we're just going to add a portable class library. Now, what the portable class library does is you define the different platforms that you want to support, and it automatically makes sure that you're only referencing the assemblies and the namespaces that all those platforms can access. So .NET 4, 4.5, Silverlight 5, Windows Phone 7.5, Windows 8 apps, and Xbox 360 if you want. For this demo, I'm not going to select Xbox 360 because it doesn't support iCommands. Oh. So, but if we add that, let's delete the class it gives us. Let's just add a new folder called View Models. We'll take our view model out of our project, paste it into our portable class library, and we'll just exclude this one. We'll add a reference to our portable class library. And to make things clean, inside of our view model, let's just make sure that it's got the correct namespace, because this should be portable class library 1. Build. That's fine. Okay, let's go back into our main view. The only thing we need to change is our using statement. So rather than getting it out of the namespace TechEd demo, we're now getting out of portable class library. Build. And everything still works as you'd expect. So let's just create another project to make sure that it all works. New project. We'll build a Silverlight application. Hit OK. So our Silverlight application, same steps. We just need to add a reference to our portable class library. Let's add a namespace. XML namespace. View models equals portable class library. Same thing again. User control data context. And we'll point that at our view model. Make sure it all builds. Cool. Let's go back to our Windows 8 UI, copy the XAML out of there, go back to our Silverlight page, paste it straight in. Straight away you can see it's already working. Let's set the Silverlight app as our startup project. There we go. So that's one reason why MVVM is a cool platform, a cool framework to follow, a cool pattern to follow. So we've decoupled out our view and our view model out, and now we can use that same view model across a number of platforms. So again, the only thing we need to do is re-implement that view on each individual platform. So let's move on. I'm just going to unload these, delete that reference, and our view, point it back at that. View models. I need to add it back in. Build. Cool. Bin obj. I'm just really, really going to clean it just in. No, really, really clean it just in case. Build. Cool. Let's get back to my slides. Okay. Now, what I thought I might do at this stage is just do a complete end-to-end diagram of how this may work back at your own office. So an end-to-end architecture sample of how this may work. So if we may have a customer order page. So we'd have a customer orders view and a customer orders view model. Exactly what we've seen so far. What we haven't looked at yet is these models. Where do they come from? So this page, we could have a customer object and an orders object. And our view model is just there holding the state for this page. Now, these could be just classes that are defined here, or they could be generated from somewhere else. But inside our view model, we're going to have two properties, one for the current customer and one holding a list of the orders for that customer. Animations. So these customers and orders could be coming from a WCF service, from an OData service, from a REST service. You could be calling a JSON data feed to bring back data. If you're using WCF, then when you add in that service reference, it will automatically generate your custom orders model for you. And again, inside the view model, you're just holding the state of that page. And those custom orders could be coming from a database. So all of this works within within your entire larger enterprise architecture. We're just focusing on this page. However you pull the data into your application, it doesn't matter. Because the view model could be getting some data from WCF service and some data from a JSON service. You're just mashing it all together inside of your one view model. Now, there are two ways you can go about organizing your views and view models. So far, what I've been doing is the one on the left, a folder for view models and a folder for views. That works well for small applications, and it's the way that I usually go. You can also split them up by doing a folder per feature. So a folder for the admin screens, holding in the view and the view model, and one for the report. And that way works well for applications that you may want to pull out into separate modules. So you can just load up the additional modules at runtime. Okay, we've talked a lot about view models and C# and data. So let's talk a little bit about how we can make our business data look sexier. So we can do that using data templates. So let's have a look at that demo. So for this, we're going to need a model. We're going to have to define a model. Let's create a new folder, add in a new class. And so for our new business logic, we're going to have a new model which shows ice creams. That's businessy. Public class ice creams. Whoops. Prop tab tab string name. Prop tab tab string category of our ice creams. Prop tab tab and the image. So, ooh, not ice creams, ice cream. Build, cool. And I'm just going to bring in a helper. My snippets are gone. Bring in a helper method. So I can just define the URI for where the image is for the ice cream, and we're just going to go and set the image source to be that image. We don't care about that. We're just going to be data binding to these properties. Let's clean up our using statements. Now, let's go back to our main view model and tell our main view model that we're now going to be holding a list of ice creams. Prop tab tab list ice creams. So that works okay. We've got our list of ice creams and we can start data binding to it. The issue that we're going to have here is, if you remember right back at the beginning of my talk, I was saying how the user interface doesn't know when it needs to update itself. The same thing is going to happen here if we use a list. We're going to data bind to it. We're going to show our initial list of 10 ice creams, but when we add in additional ice creams to it, our user interface isn't going to know that it should be updating itself. So we just need to tell user interface, give it some little hints. So instead, we can use an observable collection. So whenever we add or remove items from that collection, it'll automatically notify the user interface and tell it to update itself. Let's use a list view. Item source, so where this list should be getting its data from. Binding, and our path was called ice creams. And it's got nothing to show yet because we haven't actually created any ice creams. Height equals 400. Easy enough. Inside of our view model, we can say, hey, when you start up, create some data. And because it's ice creams, it's just like a cooking show. Here's some I created earlier. Few ice creams. Build. Oh, thank you. Okay, let's turn it off and turn it back on again. No, go away. Bin, obj, delete. Build and yay. I was hoping because I deleted the bin folder before, I wouldn't have that problem. Okay, so we're binding to our collection of ice creams. And again, we're seeing the same thing happening. It doesn't know what to do with our business object because we haven't told it what to do yet. The best it can do is say that object.toString, so it's printing out the full name of my ice cream class. But we can do much, much, much better than that. For our list view, we can define an item template. So each item in the list, we can tell it how to go and display it. So let's create a text block. Text equals binding. So this is why right at the beginning I was explaining why bindings are useful. So we can say which property to bind to, which would be the name of the ice cream. So straight away, it's already looking better. We can see each of those items. Let's just put in my favorite control, the stack panel. Let's bind to the category this time. So now we've got the name and category. Let's put in an image. The source, again, is a binding, but this time we're binding to the image property. Helps if you add in images. Okay, SkyDrive, documents, presentations, Win8 intro, ice creams. Yay! Scale down the size of my banana, height is 60. There we go. So it only took about 5 lines of XAML, and already we can start making our business objects look a whole lot sexier. And we can take this even a step further. So again, we change the orientation of our stack panel. So now all the items are being stacked across to the right. And because I like stack panels within my stack panels, bring this one down one. There we go. So we've got a stack panel stacking controls this way, then this way. Then over here we've got a stack panel going this way, then this way. And it already looks a whole lot better. Now the cool thing is, now that we've defined a data template for my ice creams, I can reuse this data template across my entire application. So I could have it here on this page and within other pages within the same application, I can keep on visualizing my ice creams how I've defined it here. And to just show that we can reuse that same one, I can change this from being a list view to a grid view. And that same exact data template is going to work. So we can extract that out, put that into a resource library, use it everywhere. Okay, so far we've looked at someone sent me messages. So far we've looked at extracting business logic out of our views into view models. We've got our view model which is reusable. We've looked at ways to make our data look sexier. But so far we're doing everything manually. And I've done it that way so you can see step by step why we're doing things how we're doing them. So hopefully now you've got a bit of a better idea of why MVVM is a good pattern and how to do it yourself. But now that you know how to use it yourself, just like back in science class, you learn how to do it just so that you don't have to do it. We're going to use a framework called Caliban Micro to take care of all of that for us. It's an open source library that's up in Coplex. And what it does is it automatically combines our views and our view models together and does a whole bunch of other sexy stuff underneath the covers. So let's look at my final demo, which is on Caliban Micro. We're just going to create a brand new project, brand new blank Windows app. Caliburn demo. Now, rather than when we start up, if we open up our app.xaml, again, this is the entry point for our application. So rather than using the standard application, we're going to tell it to start up a Caliburn application. That's just so that when it starts up, it knows what to do. Let's just add in some references to Caliburn Micro. Caliburn Windows. Cool. For our app.xaml, we'll tell it, hey, don't do any of that crazy stuff you're doing. And instead, we're going to tell it to do this little bit instead. So this is all just bootstrapping. So instead of starting up as a Windows app, we're now going to start up as a Caliburn Micro Windows application. Once it's started up and configured itself, the first thing it does is tries to find a view model called main view model. That's the only thing that I've changed so far in this application. When you start up, try to find a view model called that. So let's replicate what we did before. Add a new folder called views. Add a new folder called view models. So let's add in main view model. So far it's looking similar to what we did before. Public class. Only thing we're going to do differently is rather than implementing the iNotify property change event, we're going to subclass a class called screen. So screen is just a class that's inside of Caliburn Micro where they've automatically implemented iNotify property change and a few other helper classes for us. So we can do the same thing that we did before. We can add in a property called greeting, propful string greeting. If you remember, whenever we change a greeting, we had to just notify the user interface. So this time we're going to use the extension method which is inside of Caliburn Micro, notify of property changed. So if you remember before, we were using magic strings to say, hey, it was a greeting method that changed, greeting property that changed. But again, I said how that can be bad, because if we refactor anything, then that's not going to update for us. So Caliburn Micro gives us a little helper. So it will automatically find the properties here for us. Greeting. So now if I refactor greetings, it's going to refactor it everywhere for us. So we can no longer accidentally change property names. Beg your pardon? No. The question was, will it refactor the binding in the XAML? No, but we'll see why in a second. But that just helps you not break something. So the amount of times when I'm doing development where I'll refactor, change the name of the property, but not change a magic string, and I'm there swearing at it for about 2 or 3 hours, going debugging, going, it's updating the property, but yeah. So we've got our one method. So we've got our one property, which is going to hold our greeting. So we're going to have another property to hold that person's name again. So, propful string person name, same thing, notify property changed. Hey, the person's name the property that changed is person name. Collapse. Okay, so our view model is already looking a lot leaner. The only thing we've got so far is two properties, nothing else. We'll have our constructor where we're just setting greeting to say hello world. So again, pure business logic, nothing else. And we're going to have one method called say hello where we update the greeting to be hello plus the person name. Build. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so before, if we go back to our view model that I had in the last demo, view model, It was mostly business logic, but we had a few things in there that weren't strictly business logic or states for our page. So these commands, they weren't state. And things here, these weren't state of our page right now. But if we go to our new one in Caliber Micro, there is nothing here which isn't pure the state of our page or our business logic. Pull in that using statement. So inside of views, add new item, we add a new blank page called main view. Sure. Yay. Oh, what did... I have no idea what I just told it to do. We'll let it catch up. B-pun? Ah, okay. Oh, okay. It only added things in common. That's all cool. Oh, I think I added in not a blank page. Yeah, I added in something weird. Delete. Add new item. Oh, I added a basic page, not a blank page. So when you create a Windows 8 application, you can tell it to create a blank page, a blank application, which has nothing. Or you can tell us to start up a basic application, which will have a whole bunch of styles and things. So because I tried to create a basic page, it said, hey, you don't have all of those additional styles that we assume that you have, so we're just going to add them in for you. So we go back to a blank page. Main view. Enter. Much better. Okay, so we're not going to define a view model or anything in here this time. All we're going to have is a stack panel. And now I've lost IntelliSense. I don't need no IntelliSense. Text block. So this is greeting. Font, is it a capital S? I'll find out in a second. Button. And content equals say hello. Please work, please work. Yay. I think that deserves a round of applause. Okay. So here inside of our view now, I haven't defined my data context. I haven't told about any view models. I haven't set up any bindings. I've done nothing except for create three controls. That should be a text box so I can actually enter in the person's name. Inside of our view model, I haven't defined commands or anything which is not pure business logic. So this is more pure than what I was doing before. And inside of our app.xaml, absolutely nothing is happening except for we're telling it to, hey, when you start up, just try to find this one class called main view model. So if I cross my fingers, hey, so it started up and straight away it already says hello world. And so that was in the view model. And if I type in TechEd, click say hello, whoops, I didn't tell it what to do. Person, bugger. TechEd, yay. So all of that has just worked. So what Caliber Micro does as a framework is it connects all of this stuff up for us. So Caliber Micro is based on conventions, which is why at the beginning I was saying that the standard way of calling things is calling your view your main view, calling your view model the main view model. Because Caliber will now go and use all of those conventions for us. We told it when the application started up to just try to find main view model. So we go construct one of those up, try to find a view for you automatically called main view. Once it's found those, it'll go and bind them together and automatically set that to be the data context. Then it will go through your page for you, find each control. So say, hey, because you called this greeting, you're probably just going to want to bind that to a property called greeting. So it automatically sets up all of those data bindings for you on greeting and person name. Same thing here with button. We've called our button say hello. So it goes and reasons, hey, you're probably going to call a method called say hello. That's automatically at runtime going to create a delegate command for us, wire that up to the button, tell the command to point to that say hello method. It all just works magically. So now, because we're utilizing that framework to do the stuff for us, our application is now simpler and we don't have things which are not just things for our application. Now, we can take this a step further. Just one little step further before I finish. So if you remember when I was writing the delegate command, we had that one property called canExecute. Now we can tell Calibre Micro to do this for us automatically. So if inside of this view model, we give another property and we're going to make this a bool called canSayHello, because it's, again, it's all conventions based, so because this method is called sayHello, it's going to find a property called canSayHello and use that to say if you're allowed to call this command or not. So we're not going to use set. So can say hello, we're just going to return string dot is null or empty person name. So if the person's name is not empty, then you're allowed to click the button. If the person's name is empty, it's going to return false, so you're not allowed to click that button. So same thing again though, because this is a property and the button's bound to it, we have to just give the user interface a few little hints to say, hey, we may have changed this. So inside our person name now, whenever we update the person's name, we update the user interface to say, hey, person name has changed. We also say, hey, you know what? Can say hello also changed. So anything that was bound to it, in this case our button is bound to it, it will know to update the user interface and enable or disable that button for us automatically. So again, there's nothing in here which isn't business logic. We hit F5, straight away the button's disabled. I type in a name and now it's enabled. Delete it, disabled again. And it's all just happening automatically through conventions. Oh, and I'm done. So, I did have that slide right at the end, but it disappeared. So today, hopefully, you see why I took everything from the basics to take you through step by step by step how to do this and how to do this by hand. So why we're doing each thing and how you can do it yourself. So from this, I hope you realize that to do cross-platform applications, you may not necessarily have to go with HTML5. HTML5 is great for building cross-platform applications, give you a lot of reach, but if you're trying to do a lot of native development, then you can use a combination of using view models and the portable class library to allow you to write your Windows 8 applications, your Windows Phone applications, etc., etc. So hopefully that just gives you something to go home and think about. So remember, if you enjoyed the session, please fill out the evaluation form because it helps me to come back next year to talk to you more. If you didn't enjoy the session, just tweet about it because no one cares if you tweet. And if you enjoyed the session, this is, was recorded, so it'll be up on Channel 9. So if you want to tell your teammates some basics about view models, you can just point them through to that later. So hope everyone enjoyed that talk.